Welcome back to the Mojo Podcast with me, Richard Stokes. And wherever you're listening from, I hope you're finding ways to stay positive amongst this continued uncertainty. That this podcast is providing some entertainment and inspiration. Thank you for the feedback on the series so far. Duncan Slater's story of triumph in the Marathon du Sable as the first W amputee to complete that mammoth effort through the Moroccan desert clearly hit the mark with many of you. Easily one of the best podcasts in the podosphere. Raw, gritty, emotional, real. The great questioning and fascinating guests make for time well spent. Keep them coming. Well, thank you, Gribbler 1972, for that lovely piece of feedback, that lovely review on Apple Podcasts. And don't worry, there's plenty more to come in this series. This week, episode 5 in this series of the Mojo Podcast, a brilliant conversation from the world of rugby union. I talk to an elite athlete, a Rugby World Cup winner, an England Red Rose, an inspiring female role model, qualified plumber, and new mum. It's England's Marley Packer.
I was top try scorer and I won player of the match in the final. So I just, it gave me my mojo back in rugby again.
Marley's rugby career to date has been epic with huge amounts of success. From her position as flanker, she's helped England win the Rugby World Cup in 2014. They were losing finalists in 2017. She's a four-time Grand Slam winner and regular England and Great Britain sevens player, and recently named by the Daily Telegraph as one of the best 10 women rugby players in the world. Marley provides a first-hand perspective of the growth of the women's game, from her first experience of rugby aged just 6 to making the England team in the pre-professional era, and how now as a full-time professional this has allowed her game to flourish and also mean she can play it forward and through her exploits encourage more girls to take up the game. A key theme of our conversation is around making sure you are surrounding yourself with the right people. Being around good people has really helped Marley when there have been setbacks and adversity, be those sporting ones or just life in general. So yes, we talk about radiators, and not simply the ones in your house that she's very qualified to fix, but more the people you need around you to learn from, feel encouragement and support from, during the highs and the lows of life in an elite team sport setup. So I hope you agree, it's an honest and revealing conversation. Hope you really enjoy it. Please do subscribe so you'll get notifications when new episodes arrive. Please leave a 5-star rating and, like Gribbler 1972, please do leave a lovely review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps more people discover the Mojo Podcast. Okay, over to my conversation with Marley Packer. So welcome back to the Mojo Podcast, and I'm delighted to have England World Cup rugby winning player Marley Packer joining me from Surrey in the UK today. So Marley, I always start with this. How is your mojo today? What would you give it out of 10?
I think I'd give it an 8 out of 10. Probably when I got in my car and it was -1 this morning, it was a bit lower. But as the day's gone on, 11:30 now and it's there. So it's a good 8.
So it's been growing during the day. That makes sense from a bit of a chilly start.
Yeah, I'm not the best morning person. But yeah, it's grown over the day and it's a good 8. And hopefully it'll stay that way all day long.
Right. So it does generally for you get better during the day. As you say, the mornings take a bit of warming up.
Yes. Well, I say that, but I've just had a young kid, Oliver, and he definitely makes me smile first thing in the morning when I roll over and look at him. But same time, when I look at the clock and it's a ridiculous time in the morning, I'm like, oh, it's a long day about ahead.
Well, this is it. We both bonded over the fact we've both become new parents in 2020 for the first time. So yeah, both getting used to the early mornings as demanded by our little boys.
Yes, definitely. But, you know, they're made better when they're smiling at you and you're pulling stupid faces that you never thought you were going to pull. So, yeah, no, it's great fun and I just literally love it.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. And so when when we talk about, when I talk about this idea of mojo, what comes up for you? What how are you defining that for yourself?
I feel like your mojo is like how you're feeling, like inside and out, because you can always put a persona on or a face on that actually you're in a like happy, good place, but inside it's not quite there. So for me, like your mojo's good, then like inside and out, you're in a good place, and it takes a lot to bring your mojo down, I guess. But obviously with lockdowns, for me being an elite athlete, actually, I've been in a place before where I've probably been quite depressed, but I've had to put this front of a happy Marley being in a good place. But that's where I'd say that I'm actually just riding the wave instead of surfing the wave. And I think if you're surfing the wave, you're enjoying it, you've got a good mojo going on. That's how I would define it. I hope that's how you kind of look at it in that.
Yeah, that rings a lot of bells with me, and the sense that it's this the true you, by the sound
yes,
of it,
yeah.
What's really going on inside you, and not just what you're maybe you have to project on the outside, because as you say, you're an elite athlete, and I'm guessing, I mean, when you're fronting up on the pitch against some pretty formidable opponents, I don't know, if they're looking at you and going, her mojo's pretty low, I think I can take her today. Does that happen?
I hope they never look at me and think that, because but I think with my mojo's high, like you'll know it around camp, the other girl, like in training camp stuff, the other girls will know it and see it, whereas probably if I'm not in that place, that it doesn't matter on the pitch, I'll always be that Marley Packer, that player. But then there's that I don't know, that smile, that, you know, that glow, I guess, someone has. And I think that's massive. And I think until you come away and look at yourself and other people, that you can really start to actually see if people are really happy or not.
I love that glow that you talk about, that you feel it yourself and you can see it in other people. I guess in your case, as you say, a lot of teammates in the squad when you're getting ready for a big game. So is there a sense of... so here's the question. Is there a kind of a collective mojo in the team? Can you feel that sense? Is everybody riding the wave at the same time? Does that happen?
Yeah, definitely. Like for me in 2014, that World Cup, I massively felt that. And when we won the game in the semi-final, there was no doubt in my mind that we were going to lose that final. Like when that final whistle went, it was like, this is a special squad, these are the players around me, there is something going on that I couldn't explain. And at the time, it was just a feeling, so I think that was massive then. But different squads feel it at different times of the year, different competition, different tournaments. Like the aim is that every team hits that point and they have their top mojo is at the World Cup, obviously. But it happens throughout, and players have ups and downs, and sometimes they can be playing their best rugby, or, you know, they're a quality player, but they're just not quite hitting what their norm is. But actually, it's when everything fits together, everything's great. And it's really funny, I went training last night and I had physio, and they just... Oh, is it all the time I talk about Oliver these days? I can't help it. And they just said, like, it's so funny, Marley, since you've had Oliver, like, you're just so happy all the time. It does not. And I know I go to training sometimes and I am a bit tired, but it's just, it's definitely brought out a different me. And there's a bit of me, I'm 31 years old now, and I'm a little bit like, oh, why didn't I do it sooner? Obviously, you've got to be in the right relationship to do it sooner. Yes. But I definitely, it's the most amazing thing ever.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you, you've kind of answered the question partly, is when you're feeling then your mojo, your personal mojo is a bit on a decline, and something, a big game perhaps is coming, I think I've got to try and bring this back up. Obviously, now you've got Oliver and that's bringing out this amazing glow in you. But what other things have you found that have worked for you, and you think, I've really got to try and work this up?
Sometimes it's like getting a balance of, because I could be someone that can tuck myself away in my room and then I'll just be like, oh, I'm tired, I'm gonna go to bed, but actually I'm probably just shying away from, I don't want to interact with people. So just making sure that I'm not forcing fun, because if you force fun on someone, it just be the opposite, but actually be around good people. It making sure, like, because I love playing rugby, that is my thing, but going to the gym I do that because it makes me a better rugby player, not because I love the gym. So it's like, if it's a gym session that it doesn't really inspire me, or it's like you don't really want to go, but you know you've got to do it, actually calling up a teammate and being like, oh, do you want to do this session together? Or just putting yourself around good people to bring out the best in you. And that's what, like, I massively find that, like, helps me, and not drives me, because I have my own driving factors to make me be who I am and the rugby player I am. But actually, sometimes you just need to tap into other people to help with those driving factors.
So, yeah, some sort of accountability partners, people that really, you know, we call people like that radiators often. They sort of give out that warmth and energy that sometimes you need a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes, like, I think, like, 9 times out of 10, I'm probably a radiator, but you give out all this warmth, but actually just make sure you just don't go a little bit cold inside. So make sure you get the warmth back from other people is a massive one for me.
That
but
is a great
everyone's
tip.
Different. Everyone's definitely different. But number one, you've got to look after number one first, and then everybody else is probably it. But in a team sport, it's very different, because obviously you get lots of different people from, I say, all walks of life, but we are a little bit like that. rugby players it's an amazing game, because you've got your forwards, you've got your backs, and we're all very different. So it's definitely an amazing thing for those people. So you tap into different people for different things.
Yeah. And you talked about that, you know, your own drive, something you sound like you're very responsible for, and clearly there's a lot of love for the game of rugby. As you said, it's not hard to motivate yourself for that. It's kind of the training stuff. We need a little bit of help. What going back a little bit, what drew you then to the game of rugby?
So when you say take it back a little bit, it's a fair few years now. So I think I must have been about 6.
Very young.
And a friend from school and his parents said I would take Marley to rugby. My mum thought I was going to go to watch. So I can still physically remember it. This pair of jeans and this red, like, and had like frills around the neck and around the arms. I hated the top. I went up to this rugby match that my mum and I thought I was going to watch, but it's actually like a training session. I think it was like under 8. So I was a bit young to do it, but and came back caked in mud, top went in the bin, and I never give up rugby since then. So you would say now, being 31, I'm a bit of a veteran at it. But I still love it. Every game, like, the league is getting so much more competitive. Like, before, like, you used to have your England players, which would do the training in the gym and stuff. But since the RFU have put funding into the league, everybody is training, and it's all getting so much competitive. Every game, no game's a walkover. Every game is like a physical encounter, and you definitely know it the next day.
And so this is you're playing for Saracens in the league, so that sort of week in, week out, and then obviously getting selected for England on a very regular basis as well. What do you see? Is there a difference in, I don't know, intensity, professionalism now between club and country, or a thing is kind of leveling up a little bit?
I think it's leveling up, definitely, and I think that's what the RFU has really put by putting the funding into the league, and it makes the professionalism, like S&C nutrition, coaching. So obviously some players, they have part-time jobs so they can do more rugby because they aspire to play for England, they aspire to be a Red Rose. So I think, like, that's massive. Like, for me, you still notice it. I went, we had England camp this week on Tuesday, Wednesday, and then on Wednesday, like, we play an internal game. So, and then coming back to club and then playing on Thursday night, like, training on Thursday night. But you definitely know there is still a standard. But then for us as Red Roses and me as a player, it's about that club standard, but raising it. But actually not for me to go down to that standard, because actually that's the only way we're all going to get better. And I'm fortunate enough that England have funded me and made me a full-time athlete. And that's something that I'm forever grateful for, because I never thought that would, in my playing career, that would happen, but it has. It's been amazing. But actually now it's to keep it going, and hopefully one day that everyone that plays in the Allianz Premier 15s are a played player, not just a player that goes to work and does it. But I'm also a player from the generation where I had to have a job and play for England. It wasn't given to me on a plate. So you've got the new kids on the block these days that either come out of uni or school, like some are like unreal, like Ellie Cordun, unreal player. But they've come straight from college or university and come straight into a full-time program where they don't know what it's like to juggle a job, train in the morning, train in the evening and work in between. So I think I'm fortunate that I know the both ways. I definitely love being the full-time athlete because it also gives me time to be full-time mum as well. And that's where also like it's quite funny, like dynamics in the squad. You've got the young ones come in and they're millennial kids and they know everything about Instagram and social media, and there's this old lot being like, oh, so does this look all right, do you think we should post this or something? So it's quite funny.
You're 31 calling yourself old lot, Maria. That puts a lot into perspective for me.
Don't worry, I just mean it in the full-time
relatively
athlete. I wouldn't call me old just yet.
No, absolutely not. And what you're talking about there, I think, because I know between, was it your first and your second caps, you had quite a big gap. Is your England caps, and that's when you trained as a plumber, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So I'm a level 3 qualified plumber. I also did my GAS qualifications as well. So my 3-year gap was, I still played in like the under 20s. So that was good. So I was real young when I got my first cap, and it was in Amsterdam, and I got a starting shirt against Sweden, and Maggie Alfonsi was on the bench. And if anybody knows anything about rugby, like she's the machine, they call her. So we played the same positions, and like that was a bit crazy. And back in the day, you didn't have WhatsApp groups or stuff. You were sat in a room, they flipped over a flip chart bit of paper and the squad was on it. So you're all sat together.
Right.
And I can just remember thinking, oh, no, like I'm starting 7 and this is my first cap. It was a bit crazy. And it was like 2 weeks away in Amsterdam for this European Championship. Played the first half, got taken off, didn't play the rest of the tournament, became a European champion. So it was hard because I feel like I got an opportunity, but then I didn't get a look in again. Mm. But I was so young, you just went with it. It was just more, oh, this is amazing. Like the opportunity, I got my first cap. And probably the squad was a bit... it's a bit harder to mingle with the squad back then. They weren't so friendly and forthcoming is what they are these days. So then when I came out of it, I probably talked to the coaches. And I said, like, I don't think I'm probably ready for that standard quite yet.
Oh, right. You felt that. You recognised that.
Well, not the standard, but I need to concentrate on my plumbing. Hmm. And for that season, and they're like, yeah, okay, like we're not really looking at you, kind of thing. And then the following year, back then it was called like Super Fours, and they made like 4 teams, and we had like these massive Gilbert shirts on, like the thick cotton material, didn't fit any of us, like they were massive. Like if you talk oversized is fashionable then, fashionable now, back then it was not. So we played these Super Fours, and like, I played really well, and the coach rung me, Gary Street, at the time. He said, like, if it wasn't a World Cup year, you would be in our squad, but like, we can't. So that was that year. Then the following year, I was called into the squad, but I didn't play until they went over to Canada. I didn't get selected for that tour, but then there was an injury while they were there. So I got a call up and they said, could you get on a plane tomorrow to Canada? And I was like, oh yeah. So then I had to like tell my work, which a day's notice for 2 weeks off is not ideal when you're a plumber on a contract, which you were at the time I was the only plumber. So, and but they were really great. I mean, they sorted it and they've been really good with me ever since. So it's good. And then that whole season then, so that's 2012 season, I missed the first game was the day I landed, so obviously I didn't play then, but I played in the next game. And then for the rest of that season, I played in every game for England. So, and I also got player's player that season. So that, like, it was really nice. And that accolade for me is massive. And back then, that accolade of player's player was not really recognised. Mm. Like now there's like an RPA awards and it's a big thing, but I still always take it and remember it that at Esher Rugby Club that I got England's Rugby Player Player Award that year. So yeah, that was really nice.
I mean, recognition by your colleagues essentially of saying, Marley's made the biggest impact to
100%. And like recognition from your colleagues is more than like, obviously it's great for your coach to say, oh, that was awesome, we'll put their arm around you, we'll just give you that bit of confidence, because every player you do need that as a player, but actually the recognition from your teammates is what really means everything.
Yeah, so that area of confidence, I'd love to talk about that, because that gap that you talk about, and I know, you know, it was a very practical reason you needed to concentrate on getting your plumbing career going, because this is pre-professionalism, this is how you're getting paid essentially. Yeah. But with the focus on rugby and what you love so much, and you weren't getting the England selection, I appreciate you're playing for club, but how did you keep yourself going and motivated? And when that opportunity, that, you know, that injury opportunity came, you were like, I'm ready for this. How did you keep yourself going?
I think like, I was real fortunate for, like, I was a rugby player where coaches seen there was something special about me, or that I was like a good player. Do you know what I mean? No coach ever turned around and said to me, Marley, you're not going to play for England one day. Where I've played with players at England where I know coaches have said that to certain players. And like, actually, they get to turn around and say, wow, look what I'm doing now. Do you know what I mean? But no, that I've always had support from my coaching staff and the people around me. For me, it's just, I just loved playing rugby. There was no stopping that love for the game. In that break, I still played at under 20s level. I actually captained under 20s at that time as well. Right. So there was still that real high competitiveness. I was probably a big fish in a medium pond at that point. I hadn't jumped to the big pond of the senior squad in those 3 years, but when I did, I was ready for it more than probably what I even knew I was.
Right.
If you get me. And for a long time, I always thought I was probably quite a small fish in the big pond when I was there.
Yeah.
And I can remember saying it in an interview once, and Gary Street turned around and said to me, Marley, you're no small fish around here. And okay, thank you.
Well, that's great to hear, though, isn't it? From a coach who's making decisions in your respect, having that clearly the potential was there, and there was you were getting ready for it, and maybe they were waiting a little bit. But what strikes me there is, maybe you said small fish in big pond, maybe you had a little bit of this, you know, what we call imposter syndrome going on. It's like, I'm not how am I here? I'm not quite ready for it.
And like, you got the best player in the world, Maggie Afonso. Like she's still classed as the best player in the world now, alongside Emily Scarrett and Portia Woodman, but she played my position, so it was a little bit like, how is that? And then I played sevens, and she picked up an injury around that time. So actually, the doors massively opened for me to just do what I did. And that's what I did. I was enjoying life. I was mid-20s, like 23 coming up around this time, like loving life. I'd found a relationship that I was like really happy in at the time. Like, everything seemed to just be going right. I got picked up for a sevens contract and went over to Moscow to play sevens. Like, we were tipped to win it and we came seventh. We basically bombed out of the tournament. So it was a bit crazy. But then to actually then pick ourselves back up, we went and played for the 2014 World Cup, and running into that was probably a difficult year for me at the time, because I actually lost my dad 6 months out from that World Cup. But it was, at the time, I just, my whole focus was on rugby and do the job, like want to go to the World Cup and win the World Cup. But actually, when I said to you about at the beginning of the podcast about, actually, you've got a face and you put it on, when I came out of winning that World Cup, don't get me wrong, I was never just surfing the wave. I was proper surfing the wave at that World Cup and loving every emotion of it. But coming out of it was actually, you've got this massive high, we've won something, and it was incredible. But actually, I probably never grieved or did that part before the World Cup. So that hit me quite hard. And probably took me a couple of years to actually then not, I'd probably say rebalance myself, like, what are my goals? What are my ambitions? Like, what did I actually want? It did take a bit of a toll on my rugby. And I'd say, like, at that point as well, relationship broke down for me, and all of those life things that are uncontrollable do take a toll on actually me as an athlete. And I had good friends, good players, and then once again, I had a great, the RF, like my coaching staff at the RFU were great around me. And now, what, 6 years on, like I'm heading into a World Cup year again. I've got a son that's the most amazing thing in the world, and I'm being told I'm playing some of the best rugby that I've played in a long time. So, you know, everything happens for a reason in life, but you've just got to make sure your mojo stays intact as you're going along, I guess.
That's right. And what strikes me when you're talking there and, you know, sharing those things is I have this sense, we often think about athletes, sports stars as kind of superhuman. And we think about their physical presence, and we don't, and we're thinking more about this now. We're thinking about mental presence as well and what's going on up here. But in the past, we definitely haven't given people credit for just what's going on in your life, because what goes on in your life must affect your form.
I think that, but then, like, and it is massive with the form, and like, also in elite sport, it's like decisions are out of you. Like, as an elite athlete, we've got the desire to win at all, not at all costs, but we are very driven people. We like to make decisions. And but when you're playing at the elite sport, like, decisions are taken out of your hand. Like, you've not been selected for this game because we want to look at this person. It might not even be because of your form. We just want to look at someone else, or your contract's coming up, or something like that. So there's all things like that, that actually those kind of like, and for me, it's just actually, okay, that's not controllable. So I need to part, like, just let that be. But it's taken me a long time to learn that. And like, obviously nowadays it's a lot better place. I helped GB qualify for Rio in 2016, and in my head I think I played quite a pivotal part of that. Like, other people might say differently, but to actually qualify us, we were playing in Amsterdam Sevens, and I scored quite a pivotal try against USA, and there was a turnover ball against New Zealand that got us the winning try. So for me, that sits quite high up, but I just fell out of flavour a little bit. I'm not a player that always looks the most ripped player. So my weight at the time was always judged, and it was quite hard for me, but it's something that it just was, and I fell out of flavour, and I never went to the 2016 Olympics, and it was tough to take at the time. But actually, my family had all booked to go. So I was like, oh, and they're like, are you going to come, Marley? And I think it was 3 days before the Olympics rugby bit of it kicked off. And I booked a ticket and I went. And it wasn't how I wanted to go, but oh, I had a good time. And I just feel like that was a bit of closure on that chapter as well. Because actually, like, I could have sat at home and I would have watched it, but I would have been not bitter, because that's not, because some of my best friends went, like, and I've trained with them, I've watched what they've done, and everything they felt on the pitch, like when they won and when they lost, like, I was in the stand feeling all those emotions. And like, I did really get to enjoy my experience. And I feel like that was, for me, was the best bit of closure on that bit of a chapter. And it got me to really evaluate my life, because I was renting up in London, which obviously costs the bomb. We're no men's kind of wage packet as women's rugby players. So I was like, reevaluated, and I was like, I originally come from Yeovil in Somerset, so about an hour and a half away from Bristol. So in Bristol was my first 15s club premiership. So I thought, I want to buy a house. I'll go back there and buy a house and start my rugby again. Just start, like, not a new life, because that sounds ridiculous, but to rebuild something again. I was going back to the 15s game, and I went back. I was still full-time with England at the time, because we were going into, so in 2016 was the Olympics, but then we were going into a World Cup in 2017. Yeah. So they kept my contract going for 15s. I moved in with Poppy Cleal. She moved into my house. I bought a house which was like a throwback to the 80s, and I like completely did it up, and like I really enjoyed that. So it's something I would actually like to get into when I leave rugby. But
oh, right. Property development. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of thing. But yeah, you need to have a lot of money behind you. So you need to find an investor somewhere.
We never know. People no. listen. People listen. Yeah.
So like that, like, and I think like this house like throwback to the 80s, and I got it turned around in 2 months, and it like it's something I'm super proud of, and I love it. I went back, played for Bristol for 2 seasons, and then it. But you know, when you go back to something and it's not the same, and it's like I feel like I was trying to relive something in the past that wasn't really there anymore. So we came back from the 2017 World Cup, which we lost to New Zealand in the final, which. Was not ideal because it was wasn't what we were supposed to do. But if anyone watched that game or says to me about it, actually the game was like end-to-end rugby. It was a great game to watch, and it was on primetime TV. It was on ITV at 8 o'clock in the evening, I think. And like for me, like that's ant in deck time. So like to get that kind of coverage for a Women's World Cup final is phenomenal. So those things were like sensational about that World Cup. But when I came back from it, I was at another low again. And I went and joined Saracens, living in Bristol, but went and joined the North London club. And that's when the RFU had just pumped the money into the new league. And at the time it was called Tyrrell's Premiership 15. And we won the integral league that year. I was top try scorer, and I won player of the match in the final. So I just it gave me my mojo back in rugby again. We won the league back to back. And last year, before COVID come into play, that actually we were top of the league at the time before the league got void, null and void they called it. But you know, we were top of the league still when it got null and void.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so gosh, what a journey. I mean, I just thinking about that, when you started this off kind of talking about Rio, helping the team qualify for Rio, and then, as you say, finding that closure by taking, you know, and hats off to you. I think it speaks volumes that you went there to support your teammates, because you know them all really well, and you got that closure. And it sounds like out of that, and obviously, you know, personal loss that you'd suffered pre that as well, you know, that has that kind of set you up for this, I don't know if it's the second or third wave of Marley's career, but certainly on a really lovely trajectory that you're on now.
Yeah, like I think the trajectory I'm on now is like, it's weird because I didn't think it when I met our forwards coach after the 2017 World Cup. We got a new forwards coach, Richard Blaze, and we sat down, had a coffee together for our first meeting, and he was like, so like your last cycle. And I was a little bit like before retirement, and like that took me back. But actually it is like, there's only so long, so much shelf life a rugby player's got. And it did take me back. And like, I still think now I've still got a few more years in me, but World Cup's this year. So we'll see what England want to do after that. But for me, it's like, actually, before I never thought it was going to end. Whereas now, like, I got a treasure and enjoy every bit of it, because actually, like, it will end one day. And like, I hope once COVID is not gone, because I don't think it's ever going to go, but makes hopefully fans can come and visit, that Oliver will one day be able to watch me play, because he watches me live streamed on the TV at the moment, which is great. But that's the one massive thing. I want my son to come and watch me play. And yeah, I think that'd be amazing. But and I've just got to enjoy each game as it comes, because you never know. These last couple of seasons, I have had injuries which have taken me out for longer periods than what I've ever had in my career before. Yeah. So actually just making sure that that's all, like making sure the balance is there with it all.
Yeah, and how, and with that, because obviously every athlete, unless they're exceptionally lucky, is going to suffer some level of injury in their career. And how are you coping with it when your treatment is in and around the club, and you're seeing everyone playing, doing the thing that you love doing, but you can't do, and you've got to be patient, I suppose, more patient the older you get as well. How do you cope with that? How do you keep your mojo going then?
It's hard. It can be very difficult. For me, I think I've been very lucky. So I've had two shoulder ops, and both of them were actually booked in on our off season.
Yeah.
So actually, I've usually just missed the first two games of the season or something like that. So that's been very lucky. My ankle happened last year. So obviously, me and my partner had IVF for Oliver, and the weekend of my ankle, my partner had a scare actually the night before I did my ankle. So in perspective of how I felt and dealt with that, the previous night and what went on was much more meaningful, and it just made me look at the whole, like, the ankle situation is actually, like, that can get fixed. I'm more concerned about the other stuff. And like, yeah. I never thought I'd ever be like that either. And then... Yeah. And then it's just really weird, because my ankle then, obviously, the Six Nations never... I did my ankle the weekend before the Six Nations started, so and that ruled me out. I think it was a 16-week turnaround for me to get back, so I was never going to get back for Six Nations. So if they got this Grand Slam win, I was never going to be part of that back-to-back championship, which I've never done in my career. Like, there's a lot of things I've done in my career, but that's something I've never done. So I was
right.
Like, I had my surgery, then we went into lockdown. The girls played 4 out of 5 of the games, so they won the Six Nations, but they ain't got the Grand Slam win. Played 4 out of 5 games, and I was left doing physio to myself whilst FaceTiming my physio, trying to get me back fit over the pandemic in lockdown. So when we were allowed to get, like, contact and stuff, I was actually in a really good place. I'd managed to get myself back running, not contact running, but running straight line, doing running drills and stuff, in a real good place. And the first week back with England, and I was in training with the girls. So I hadn't actually missed. I'd missed 4 games of rugby, but actually that's all I'd missed through this injury. And I said to my coach that first week back at the end of the week, I was like, so Mids, obviously I know I wasn't, like, playing Six Nations, but this Italy game for the Grand Slam win, like, are we all up for contention? Am I up for contention for selection if I'm fit? And he's like, oh yeah, definitely. So that was it. So that was my motivator. I was like, right, no taking the foot off the gas, just make sure that you're ready for it. So all good. I was back, like, training with the girls, and then my ankle, the load of running I did, had a bit of a flare up. I just went in for physio just for a little bit of TLC, really, and what I told them put me straight back in a boot, and I had 2 weeks off feet, which was a little, like, pullback. Missed the first 2 games of the season, but then I played the third and I got selected for the Italy game. Got a try at the end and did my baby cradle celebration, which I also cracked my head open as well. So I had this big taper. I looked terrible, but, you know, I'll never forget it, because Tash, my partner, said to me, next time you score, do the cradle. And I did it at Saracens, but because it's live streamed, the cameras aren't always the best. So when I did it at England, I just had to do it, like, and
that was a beautiful moment.
It was really amazing. And then we so I became a back-to-back champion. And you never thought it, like, me and Abby Ward, we were both sat watching the England-France game, the first Six Nations game, back in February last year, and then we were both part of winning the Grand Slam, because we both played in the Italy game, which we were never gonna play in. So yeah, no, it's quite great.
I imagine a very proud Oliver in years to come with a picture of you doing the cradle on his room somewhere.
I hope so, but you're probably going, Mum, what did you look like? That's so embarrassing.
Well, this
I'll give her a little clip.
And as you say, as you talk about, you know, getting bashed up, I think, do you find people, maybe men specifically, are they quite surprised about the physicality of the women's game?
I think so. Like, I feel like the women's game, a lot of people can be like, oh, it's not, like, we get asked all the questions, like, do you put pads over your boobs, or do you play with the same size ball, or, like, these are ridiculous questions to us, because, like, it's just the same. And actually, if you watched a women's game to a men's game, actually a lot of people then turn around and say, actually, we really enjoyed that, the physicality was, like, up there. And the ball is actually in play a lot longer than what it is with men, because in the women's game, there's not so much kicking. Right. I say that this last season, I feel like there's a lot more kicking and there's a lot more me running up and down. And but it is really good. And there's a lot more ball in play time.
Great. So actually, yeah. So if it's offering something different to the men's game, because as you say, right now, the men's game is very kicking focused, which I'm sure the powers that be may adjust in time with some rule changes. And I saw just before we started speaking, I saw a YouTube clip of you playing sevens against New Zealand.
Yes,
and you literally picked up one of the Kiwi players.
Yeah, give her a little carry. Yeah, so that was over in Vancouver tournament, and it was a bit of a mess at the breakdown between us, and I just think, I don't know what I was thinking, but I just picked her up and we just went for it. I think actually I looked really great then, and I was like, oh, that was actually really tiring afterwards.
But it goes to show, I think, a lot about that, you know, the physicality of the women's game that's there as well.
And
it seems to me that, you know, with your rugby and with plumbing, you've kind of taken on two very, you know, male dominated worlds and you're winning, which is great. Yeah. Which is great to see.
I do try.
So what does the future hold? I mean, I know we're in this, you know, no one could have predicted what happened last year. This year is uncertainty. I know there's uncertainty around when the Six Nations, for example, this year is going to happen. You've got World Cup hopefully happening. But maybe beyond that, what do you want to achieve? What do you want, dare I say, what legacy do you want to leave the game of rugby, Marley?
For me, it's a tough one. Like, I think, like, if you look at my short-term goals, I take each game as it comes, and I want to make sure I finish that game, and I want to finish that actually. Yeah, Marley Plaka played well that game. Oh, like, you can't get it every game, obviously, but like that, I leave a thought around there. Get another Grand Slam win in the Six Nations. Then obviously I want to go to the World Cup, and I don't want to just be the open side flanker. I want to be the best open side flanker at that World Cup. But there's a lot of rugby to be played, hopefully, before then and now. So I try not to look too far ahead. And the one thing I do know is that when I left school to go to college, I did a sports coaching course, and I hated it. I didn't want to coach kids. I loved playing rugby. I was great at sport, but I didn't really want to coach kids. Then I'd rather bang their heads together. But now I want to give back. Like, so I'm a level 2 qualified coach. I want to do my level 3. And whether it's boys or girls, I would like to go back and do some coaching at any level. So grassroots to elite level. I wouldn't say I was fussy on that one. Because I feel like I've still got so much to give, even though I'm not playing. Whereas, like, 17-year-old Marley, that was not something that I ever thought I'd want to do. And that's not in a horrible way. I just didn't want to coach. Whereas now, I've been there, I've done it, and I've loved my career, and I generally have loved my career. That actually, I want to give back. And I think that's massive for me to say that I love my career, because I have had some downs in my career, and there is times where, like, people say, oh, like, it's tough, but, you know, it's all, everything happens for a reason. And, you know, I'm very fortunate that I've managed to have the career that I've had from a girl out of Yeovil, where probably a lot of people probably ripped me off. So I'll definitely take that.
And do you think that when you were, I mean, we're going sort of slightly back again, but when you were a young girl, do you think people wrote you off and said, you know, I don't know what was going on academically for you at school?
Yeah, probably academically at school. And I wasn't the most well-behaved at school. I'd be the first to admit that. So, and I didn't choose probably to not hang around with the right people, but right decisions around the right people. Do you know what I mean? Because I had lots of good friends around me. I wouldn't ever not say that, but decisions that I made. So actually learning from that, and then actually how I've grown to who I am today, like, I'm immensely proud of it myself, so hopefully, like, the people around me are as well. But it's taken a lot of time for me to be able to say that about myself, and probably since Oliver, I'm probably a lot more in touch with that, which is just crazy. Like, he's brought out a whole different side to me that I didn't really know. So
the sense of your achievements and having pride in those achievements and be willing to talk about it. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, more so. And I think purpose as well. Like sometimes, like probably in my career, I've just like, I've been good at rugby, but like when I was a 15-year-old girl, I never aspired to play for England. It just happened. And I think that's where it's probably, it's a little bit different, where if you're driven, right, you've seen that, you want it, that's a whereas it just kind of happens. So for me, it's just like, actually, like I've enjoyed doing, getting to that, and now the drive was, once I got that shirt, I want to keep that shirt and I want to be the best I could be. So that's where my drive's changed.
Yeah, love that. And it sounds like, and you're talking about the coaching bit, and you've probably worked with lots and lots of different coaches and styles of coaches. Have you kind of taken that all on, and you've got lots of nice tips in your coach's toolbox to share now?
Yeah, definitely. And I can always remember one coach saying to me, like, you could be coached by a coach and you probably don't like them. You probably don't know their ethos or what they're trying to coach, but you might take one thing away from that coach and you pull it in your bag or in your toolbox and you'll keep that and do it to every coach you have. And I probably got different things from different coaches across my career, and not all of them, like, I've like seen eye to eye their styles, but actually I've probably learned a little bit from each coach, and that hopefully makes me the best player that I am now. So, and I massively take that in life. Like, not everyone in life is, there's not a book on life or how, but if you take from different people what you need or what you can do, then actually that's the best thing you can do.
That's great advice. You just take those nuggets that are everywhere.
Yeah,
and I think it's about being open to them, because you can close yourself off, and maybe we do that a bit more in our youth, and then we open ourselves up and go, oh, this amazing advice and support that's around me. But you have to be open to it, which it sounds like you are completely. Marley, well, this has been a wonderful conversation. I always end thinking about, you know, on a day-to-day basis, and I know you talked about cuddles and hugs with Oliver in the morning, it's great for your mojo, but what else do you do, like, every day? I've got to do these things and now I know my mojo is going to be in a pretty good place if I do that.
I think for me it's really sleep. So, like, make sure that I like, if I'm tired, I get to bed early, or actually if I've got a lot going on in my mind, like, I actually write a list of things of what to do, but I won't do it on my phone or on my like laptop or an email, because like with a list, when you pen it down, you can cross it out. And I don't know, for me, that's a sense of achievement, because usually on my list is things I don't really want to be doing, but I have to be doing. So to keep my mojo going. Yeah, I think so.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Sleep. And getting those things out of your head. I mean, it's great advice, actually.
And really also, if my other half if I'm keeping her happy, then I have a happy day. So, you know, those three things always help.
Someone did say, happy wife, happy life. So if your significant other is happy, then you're going to be in a pretty good place.
Yeah, not happy, yeah. and it's the same the other way around as well. So it works both ways.
Absolutely right. Well, Marley, it's been fantastic speaking to you today. Thank you for taking the time out of, I know, a very busy training schedule and of course looking after Oliver's schedule as well. So I really appreciate it. Thanks for joining the Mojo podcast today.
No worries, and I've really enjoyed it. Thank you very much, Richard.
What a great, really open chat there with Marley Packer. I really enjoyed that, and she's done an amazing job really throughout her career, not just winning matches but really working hard to put women's rugby on the map, and she'll encourage many, many more girls to take up the sport in the future, no doubt. If you'd like to see Marley in action, be sure to check out the highly competitive Women's Alliance Premier 15s, and she's certainly in contention to be in the England squad for the forthcoming Six Nations, which starts early April. Now, sadly, the Women's World Cup has been moved from the end of this year, or September this year, until 2022 because of COVID. But that does mean Marley gets to be home to enjoy Oliver, her son's first birthday. Something any parent would want to do, for sure. So thanks again, Marley. Really enjoyed that conversation. More superb guests lined up for the Mojo podcast in this series about sporting endeavour, including Professor Damien Hughes, co-host of the super successful High Performance podcast, and Captain Donald Lawson, who is working hard to become the first African-American to compete in the incredibly tough Vendée Globe yacht race. Until then, I hope your mojo continues to flow.